creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the Executive Director of the National Art Gallery in the Bahamas, and you are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget to download the Guardian Radio app from the App Store or Play Store so you can listen to Guardian Radio even when you are not in the Bahamas. I do know that we have listeners from overseas, and thank you for listening. It's always great. I know there's some students up at Concordia University in Montreal in the Caribbean Studies program, apparently, that listen. So shout out to you and anyone else listening to the Blank Canvas from overseas. You can also just live stream if you're a little bit more old school like me and you actually secretly hate your phone and you want your bubbler back. You can go to www.guardiantalkradio.com and click on the live stream button and just listen to it while we're airing. Or you can go back if you missed the show and listen to it again by going to the NAGB's website at www.nagb.org.bs. Go find the Blank Canvas under the Learn menu and the Adult Programs, Adult and Public Programs. And you can look at all the old Blank Canvas shows and you can forward them to friends and all kinds of things. So it's a great resource. So do tune in because it's when I think about we've been doing this show for 10 years. Weekly, and somehow because it's a Wednesday night, we never get the bank holiday. We never get Christmas. Like it's like everyone else takes a 4-day weekend. Blank Canvas is still airing because it's always in the middle of the week. So there are literally, there are hundreds of shows, and it's amazing. It just shows how much creativity and how much there is in our little nation, and our little nation of 380,000. It's just extraordinary to me that we still have so much to talk about. Tonight, I have two wonderful women on the show, Tamika Galanis and Anina Major. They are part of the exhibition right now called Floating Rib, which is on the upper floor of the National Art Gallery, which is, of course, free to come to every day if you live in the Bahamas. If you're a tourist, I'm sorry, I apologize in advance, but you still have to pay, but it's totally worth it. It's only $10 and it's amazing. And you get just the richness of our culture and great air conditioning. So back to Tamika and Anina, let's talk specifically about your works in the show. Tamika, your piece, and as I sort of mentioned in passing, maybe we can let the audience know what that means, is you're a documentarian and an archivist, and you're an artist, but the way you approach your work is not how many people might imagine it, like you're there with a paintbrush or a hunk of clay. You're really delving into stories and history and creating images or creating documents that ask us to reconsider or ask us to think more deeply or ask us to look at something from another point of view. Tell us about the work I Named Charlotte that you have on in Floating Rib right now.
So I Named Charlotte is about an enslaved woman from a plantation in the south of Cat Island who sort of steps out of the shadows of Black Dick DeVoe, who is historically known for leading the 1831 uprising at Golden Grove in why can't I think of what that settlement's name is?
Greenwood,
Cat Island. So Charlotte is this woman who, unless you're mining the archives, you would never even, have noticed her. There is a Dr. Alan Myers, archaeologist, anthropologist, who's been working for over a decade with the plantations in Cat Island. And he and I seem to always be in Cat Island at the same time. He's a professor at Eckerd College in Florida. And we got to talking about a paper that he'd written about the uprising at Golden Grove. And two women are named in that paper as accomplices to Black Dick in a group of 11, Charlotte, and there's another woman named Linda. And in the court documents from the archive, we can tell that Charlotte was prepared to defend Linda from their slaver, Joseph Hunter. She had armed herself with a rock, and we know how Bahamians feel about throwing rocks, right? So she meant business. She didn't have a gun, she didn't have a machete, but she was prepared to defend this other woman, the only other woman named in the uprising. But Charlotte doesn't stop there. So I found out about her on this one trip, and I had gone back for a research trip in Cat Island, and I was thinking about Aubert and just how, you know, we continue to demonize Aubert and all the reasons that it was demonized, and because it was a liberatory praxis back then. And I was thinking, you know, well, why didn't she just poison her way to freedom? And Dr. Myers happened to be there, and he said, actually, I'm going to give you something that's going to blow your mind. He said, I have a letter from Joseph Hunter, plantation owner, from his daughter, Sarah Poitier, which is where our Poitiers come from, right? She had written this letter after the trial, after Charlotte's acquittal. She was very incensed that Charlotte was being ordered back to the plantation because she had for years been trying to poison master and mistress, right? And then the whole thing just, the gate flew open. Yeah. The gate flew open, and I started spending time on the plantation. And actually, you know, I owe so many thanks to the Hunter family, of course, how they are direct descendants of the Daisy May. Daisy May, yes.
She's awesome. She's amazing.
Yes. They all are. You know, the family adopted me as soon as I stepped off the mail boat, and they've been teaching me all family island living ways since the first day I arrived in Cat Island. But they are direct descendants of the Golden Grove mm-hmm. Plantation, former slaver Joseph Hunter. Okay, so they're all hunters that still live in Cat Island. And even in cooperating with me to embody Charlotte in this work, this was a miracle, sort of, right? A happening that she would step out of the shadows and be able to write a speculative history about. In my story, Charlotte exacts her revenge from her slavers and eventually kills them. We don't know why Joseph Hunter and Sarah Poitier die, but in the archives, just before the end of apprenticeship, they both drop dead inexplicably. Within weeks of one another.
Well, I would also imagine that even if those things happened, and I'm sure they did, there was, of course, you know, the attempt to cover it up, to not, like,
right.
let anyone else get that idea, right? So even, mm-hmm. So I could, you know, and I think so that has something to do with those hidden histories. And I think, again, as women, you know, we're realizing as we come into the 21st century, more and more research is done in so many fields, in science and literature, that very often there was a woman doing that, and for many reasons they got written out of history, mm-hmm. intentionally, unintentionally, probably intentionally most of the time, but also, you know, and I had that conversation even, you know, we talked at the beginning of the show about this idea of the master artist. And I remember when I first came home, it was a show that had been curated already, and it was in Iowa, and then we brought it back to the NAGB. And I remember talking to some of the elder statesmen and sort of saying, you know, were there women artists at the like who was working with you? And it wasn't that there weren't, but of course they weren't documented. Nobody yeah. was, you know, and they were not being loud enough or had the time because they were busy, you know, doing the 18 billion other things women often do, as we've seen in this pandemic, yeah. right? That women have lost so much ground because immediately all the tasks of cleaning the house and taking care of the kids and, you know, just overwhelms anything else. So there's so many reasons where women are not put to the forefront. So I think, you know, again, that you've given Charlotte her name, and, you know, I knew who Black Dick was. I grew up with that name. We grew up learning that story. But I'd never heard about Charlotte.
Yeah.
And Charlotte is, you know, speaking of women and the billion other things that they're doing during the day, you know, this paper even unpacks that her story is so complex, even the week leading up to the uprising, because her slaver had accused her children of stealing from him during the week, right? And when I think back about the letter and very many years of her trying to poison her way to freedom, I think about how many hats she had to wear, just yeah. how compounded
oh, yeah.
this frustration had to have been, right?
Yeah.
So it was
the
not
level of
about women, it was about yeah. her children, it was about yeah. her own person, you know, mm-hmm. it was about everybody else that she was united with as a front there, but she was seemed to have been a force to reckon with.
Yeah. And you basically, in a way, brought her being back in these photographs, which are very sort of mystical in a way, or you know, they're not trying to be documentary in that way, like, you know, reenacting something, or yes. But you've physically given a body to this story in this very beautiful and haunting way, and this very monumental figure of a Black woman is at the forefront and claiming, you know, taking up space, claiming space, and behind is the crumbling DeVoe manse or whatever it was. And again, it's just very, very haunting, very, very beautiful. How do you work out that as an artist? Is that something you work with the model on? Is it something that you dream? I mean, how does that image, how do you bring that image to life? I know that's an impossible question.
So there are a number of things in that. There are a number of elements in that photo that are specifically Cat Island, right? Mm-hmm. She's wearing a mask of turkey wings that I've never, ever seen before. It's a type of shell that washes up in Obi, mm-hmm. in this particular spot. So the mask is made of that and of straw. So straw is in that corridor in both. Yeah. I work, many work, right? It's tied into to both of those things. And the plantation and, you know, Love Vine, I talk about a lot in this project because it's really, really prevalent in Cat Island. Yeah. I know you go to Cat Island all the time. You see it, it's everywhere, right?
Yeah, like it really is, yeah.
It's taken over so much of the plant life in Cat Island that it's kind of unbelievable. It's like it's its own sculpture itself.
Yeah.
But When I am in Cat Island and living in Cat Island and I engage both locals and second homeowners, it's interesting the way that they view the plantation ruins that still remain there. Mm-hmm. And the way that we even engage the legacy of slavery. And, you know, we use Love Vine in both folk magic and folk medicine. And in the same way, we use the castor plant. That's a big element in this.
Yeah.
In this particular series, it's magic and it's medicine and it's poison, depending on whose hands it's in, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Love Vine, you can't extract that. I mean, it's so entwined in what it's feeding off of. Yeah. You cannot extract it from its source plant without either completely killing it or maiming it. And mm-hmm. really, I see it play out every day in Cat Island. I see the way that we do or do not recognize the legacy of slavery in this region, in this country, particularly in that space that is most prevalent because there are more plantation ruins in Cat Island.
Yeah, so many, and they're all being just left to really fall apart. So,
and they're all there.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You brought up two things. I mean, one is how we confront that history. But when you said like the magic and the poison or something like that, and it made me think, because I want to give talk also about Anina's work, made me think about, because again, it seems like your works are so far apart in a way, but they're also so close. Anina's work is really dealing with tourism and the destruction of some of our legacy. And I was thinking about that too, about how tourism is sort of this seen as this gift, but is also this terrible, you know, really burden, right? In the way, same way that, like, you know, a plant can be either like magic or poison. And that in a way sort of ties your works together, and as well as having the straw element. So Anina's piece is, you know, no vacancy in paradise, blinking on this backdrop of the thatch of the palm that is used for all of these straw items, the straw mask that you refer to in your work, Tamika, and is also then in the next work in the show with Avery's work. So tell us a little about that, Anina, about your piece and, you know, how this system of, because that comes up a lot in your work with the straw dolls, how you know, tourism and it's taken on heritage and in a way sort of it is in a bizarre way, like, kept people still making things that maybe they would have stopped making, but it's also like transformed it in a really unrecognizable way.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, I just want to say, Tamika, thanks for explaining your piece. I knew a little bit about it.
I wish we had another hour. I felt really bad. I'm like, I'm gonna get to Anina now.
Yeah. Like, I knew a little bit about it, but it's just good to hear. And I just want to say to that point, you know, these titles of like artist, documentarian, and whatnot really have no place in kind of when we start to think about what stories need to be told and what's important. And I say that because, you know, when I think about my own work, I'm also always thinking about the sources and what inspires me, and realizing that history for such a long time has failed to acknowledge the role of women or feminine energy in these kind of movements across the board. I mean, I think that's like global, we see that. So I guess to talk a little bit about No Vacancy, for me, this installation, I had been, you know, one of my favorite poems is No Vacancy in Paradise by Patricia Miraculous Glinton. And I don't know what it is about that poem. It just kind of encapsulates all of the feelings when I start to think about, you know, and it all goes back to the women who work with straw for me, right? Because of that personal connection to my grandmother. But I'm still trying to parse through like the level of complexity it meant to exist in that space, right? And how some of those attributes are still present with me today, who's not a straw vendor, and how, you know, and how that kind of market or industry is so valuable beyond the objects, right? And so because I'm still parsing through that, I kind of have to keep nitpicking at everything. I have to nitpick at the market in which it exists, the environment in which it exists, the people who are in this environment. I have to keep kind of peeling back those layers. And this poem to me just really resonates because it peels back and presents a kind of viewpoint from the actual person in the market. And there are just some lines that I couldn't get past. So for me, that's where my piece kind of started when I first started thinking about this. And again, you know, I work mostly with ceramics, so this was also kind of like, how do I get this to be the foundation of what we're talking about? And I just realized that, like, it's a sign. It's literally a sign. Like, it's not an object. It's a sign. Like, it's a billboard. It's a notification that I want to blast out to everybody that, you know, this idea of this place being something that you can come and use and abuse and just go and leave, like it didn't really affect the people that live there, or that the people who were there, their performance didn't have, isn't directly related to their livelihood. And what does it mean to have to put on this kind of like performance just to feed your children or just to exist, right, for your livelihood? Like, I just kept coming back like, it's a sign. It has to be big and flashing and alarming and look out of context, right? And so that's where the kind of neon language came in, where we're talking about, and I mean, when I think about it, I think back to a specific time, right? Our industry of tourism took off really when, you know, the economy in the U.S. was also taking off, right? And we, close proximity, were able to kind of gain from some of that growth. And a lot of my familial history gets lost at this time, right? Because we have a lot of my family migrating from the Family Islands to New Providence and leaving behind a particular way of living. And there's literally no documentation. Like, people are changing their names. And so it becomes a really poignant place for me where I'm struggling to kind of find out something. And so I just was thinking about the most alarming way to kind of to make a statement in that environment. And the sign to me just kind of was like the ultimate, you know, for a long time. I think now that's changed, but for a long time, you know, signage in the Bahamas could not be this way, like legally not allowed to have like neon signs or whatnot. And, you know, or any like bright flashing signs. It kind of went against, I guess, the look of the aesthetic of the country. So for me, it was like really important to like subtly say that and make you start to think about what that really means. The installation, bringing in the palms, you know, is also a part of my lexicon. And I had recently given a talk where I had spoken about, where is this book? The Eye of the Tropics. I think it's like Krista Thompson.
Yeah, Krista Thompson's book. Yeah. Revisiting an eye for the tropics.
Yeah. And I was just thinking about this one part in that line where they talk about how, you know, this kind of the woman was synonymous with these palm trees. Like they would often like and not talk about, you know, instead of directly talking about the Black woman or the local woman, they would talk about these palm trees instead.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I started to think like that's a much larger part of my lexicon, which is why this kind of installation and the sign is grounded in this kind of patchwork, because I'm really referencing that and somewhat of the, you know, a language that we all can relate to that's not foreign, like the neon.
Yeah. So it made me think when you were speaking, I wish we had another hour. This always happens. It just gets heated up right when you go to end the show. You know, thinking about how there's this, like, again, performance for tourism and what it does to our traditions. And yet at the same time, you know, we're always lamenting, or many of us are lamenting, you know, how there's no, you know, everything in Cat Island is being left to rot, and no one is, you know, really caring for those spaces. But, you know, what would happen to them if they actually became subsumed in the tourist, you know, which is obviously the big challenge they have in the States with, you know, plantation tourism, right? So it makes you, you know, there's part of me that thinks one's sort of glad it's there for Tamika to make beautiful photographs out of, rather than, you know, they're selling tickets with people dressed up in costumes.
Oh, God.
So you start to, you know, your mind goes in that direction.
And like, we will not host weddings.
Maybe that's the positive aspect of them not having become part of it back in that time you're speaking to, Anina, when there was that boom and everybody, maybe now we've seen that happen and we've been able to be critical, look critically at that. And maybe now there's a way forward to preserve these sites in a way that is, you know, honors the people that were there, you know, before. Yeah. Anyway, so unfortunately, we've come to the end of our hour. It always goes so quickly.
I know.
So I just want to say to the audience, come see the show. Because there's more to talk about. And, you know, we have, of course, our curatorial staff here. We'd love to engage with you and our education staff as well. And, of course, I'm hoping that, Anina, when we can all travel again, you're going to make it down. And maybe we can have an in-person artist talk to continue this and allow the audience to come in and pose questions to you and continue this conversation further. So, Tamika, Anina, I just want to say thank you so much for joining me this evening. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks for
having us.
Yeah, and big thank you to Natalie Willis for curating this beautiful show, and to the audience. And Tuesday through Sunday, Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, noon to 5. And if I didn't mention it before, I might have. It's free if you're living in the Bahamas. So we'll see you soon at the NATV. I want to thank you for listening to The Flank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I want to thank you all for listening, and I want to thank the artists for being here. Everybody have a really great night.
Soon.
We're done. Thank you. So we have 1 minute till your next meeting, Anina. Could you-